Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The eviction of up to 250,000 people living alongside railway lines in New Delhi may amount to a denial of justice, and it could also violate India's obligations under key international rights treaties, a UN-appointed independent rights expert said on Monday. The development follows the Supreme Court's eviction order issued in August for around 48,000 households whose shacks line the tracks. Balakrishnan Rajagopal, Special Rapporteur on Adequate Housing, said that none of those who stood to be affected appeared to have been consulted by the court before it issued the ruling. In a statement, Mr. Rajagopal cited Article 2.3 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. It states that anyone can seek judicial assistance against decisions regarded as arbitrary. Although the rights expert welcomed the court's decision to temporarily halt the eviction for 4 weeks, he said that this was insufficient time to relocate all those affected. The release of more than 1,000 prisoners held as part of the conflict in Yemen could pave the way for further positive developments for the people of the war-torn country, the UN Special Envoy overseeing the deal has said. Speaking after representatives from the Yemen government and the opposition signed the prisoner release agreement on Sunday in Switzerland, Martin Griffiths told UN News that both parties had expressed a desire to meet again soon to discuss further moves.
It is a political moment as well as a humanitarian moment. It's principally humanitarian, of course, but the fact that the parties were willing to sit down here together to make the concessions that any negotiation requires and to go public with a very important decision as they have done today, that shows that they do have the will to negotiate, and that, I hope, is a will that we can translate into negotiations on the wider conflict.
Mr. Griffiths said that his immediate priorities also included reaching an agreement on a national ceasefire, for which negotiations began 6 months ago. It remains key that the country's roads, airports, ports and schools can reopen, and for Yemenis to be able to trade once again, the UN negotiator said at the end of the week-long meeting co-hosted by the Red Cross. Nigerian authorities have been urged to intervene after a singer was sentenced to death for performing an allegedly blasphemous song and sharing it on social media. Yahaya Sharif Aminu, who is 22, received the death penalty in August from a Sharia court in northern Kano province. Mr. Sharif Aminu was convicted of sharing his song on WhatsApp, which at the time led to local politicians calling for his execution. A mob also burned down the artist's family home in March, and he has received death threats, UN-appointed independent rights experts said on Monday. In a statement, they also expressed concerns over reports that he has been held incommunicado and that he did not have access to a lawyer. UN Special Rapporteur Karima Benoun also said that applying the death penalty for sharing a song on the internet was a flagrant violation of international human rights law and of Nigeria's constitution. The human rights expert called for the death sentence to be overturned and for authorities to guarantee his safety and right to due process while he appeals the verdict. The work of UN-appointed independent rights experts is at risk from a critical lack of funding, they warned on Monday. In an appeal for member states to help, they said that financing their work adequately had been a concern for several years and that the COVID-19 crisis had made their work even more difficult. Today, member states have paid 60% of their commitments to the United Nations regular budget. As a result, some experts are unable to carry out their mandates properly, the Special Procedures Coordination Committee said in a statement, describing rights experts as the eyes and ears of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. Their work includes making country visits to engage state representatives and civil society, meeting victims of rights violations, and making concrete recommendations to assist states in fulfilling their human rights obligations, they added. The experts work on a voluntary basis. They are not UN staff and do not receive a salary. They are also independent from any government or organization. The Human Rights Council's special procedures bodies include the 56 mandates that cover international human rights. These include violations of the rights of communities and populations historically subjected to discrimination. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Big four. folks. Yes, we do today. We got the big score. We got Donald Trump taxes and John Grant with the New York Times talking about, well, he's not working for the New York Times. He should be. John, you should be working for the New York Times.
But, right, yeah.
Yeah, but nevertheless, there's real dirt here. And we've got some of it today.
Smoking
gun
here.
God. It's all over the place. People are talking about this everywhere, even even out here. I mean, you know, there's Donnie paid $750 of taxes. Why did he? I wonder how he came up with that figure the last 2 years. He's president.
Well, what,
of the
yeah,
United
that's
States
what gets me. 2 years in a row, he pays $750 and no cents. Wait a minute. How come it's the same?
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
What? What was he sitting there? Sitting at Mar-a-Lago and he says, why $750? I don't know why he would come up with that, why they come up with that figure, but that's.
Yeah.
And then the 10 years of the fifth, and 10 of the 15 before that, he didn't pay any taxes.
No,
this is just stuff. I have not read the article. You said it was 10,000 words.
Well, yesterday, Monday, had a huge article. 10,000 words, I guess, is the figure. I read the whole thing religiously, and today they got one that's pretty long, goes on 3-4 pages, and this focuses on more contemporary issues with his, you know, debt that he owes and all this kind of stuff. You know, when you read all this stuff, the accumulated image and narrative of this man becomes pretty clear. And, of course, his son has gone on Fox and Friends, Donald Jr., with Katie McEnema or whatever her name is, the press secretary, to say, oh, this is all fake news, it's nonsense. But they never... You know, they never can get any traction on those sorts of accusations. It's clearly this is his tax returns, you know. And what it tells you about this man is that he has a tendency from the moment he got $400+ million from his father, you know, who had apparently got a lot of money through federal benefits and things like that for slum lords or whatever and things like that. And so he gets his $400+ million from his father, and he squanders it on all kinds of things and ends up in bankruptcies and failures. And then he writes off all this stuff. He gets good lawyers, and, you know, he writes it off like something like, what, $86 million in failures. And so this is then carried over the next 18 years, and he uses that to then pay down all of his, so he pays no taxes. You know, all this sort of three-card Monte sort of highfalutin finance stuff. And then, you know, he's at a loss here. The man's at a loss because everything's bust. And he comes up, lands in it with this apprentice show. For some reason, this really hits off in the go-go 80s and 90s or whatever it is with the, you know, the CEOs and, you know, Greed is Good from Wall Street, you know, Oliver Stone's movie and all this. That whole go-go period, everybody loves the idea of this flashy CEO firing people. So the reality show really, really hits. And then he markets that, his name, his brand name, in things like mattresses. He gets $15 million from Serta Mattress for, you know, having the Donald Trump line of mattresses, and then he sells cookies, somehow double-dip cookies, Oreos or something. And all these stupid testimonials that he's involved in, he starts this, you know, Donald Trump University, in which he scams people into, you know, they have to pay $35,000 for like a weekend or something, and they, you know, it's a scam. And, you know, it's that's been through court, and it's down as a scam. But anyway, he's doing all this with his apprentice fame and money and celebrity and all this kind of stuff. And so he gets a big boost of money here, right? And So what does he do? The same goddamn thing. He squanders it, and before you know it, there's failures and this and that. And he's once again kind of bust, and he's at a loss. So he sort of digs around, as a con man does. What's the next scam I'm going to do? Well, he decides in 2012 or something, he runs for president, silly campaign. Then he tries it again, say, what the fuck? You know, I'll get my brand jacked up here as a con man, and, you know, I can, you know, I'm at it again. I'm in the game again because I'm running for president. I'm making all this blather and loudmouth stuff, calling all these other Republicans jerks and slowheads and all this stuff. And before you know it, oops, then the son of a bitch wins. You know what I mean? Wait a fucking minute. This is not what I planned on. I was going to improve my brand, right? And so he ends up, because of all the money from The Apprentice, he's bought all these goddamn golf courses, 11, 12 golf courses all over the world. And they're wondering, well, a lot of times, where is the money coming for these golf courses? The big question is, he's in debt for, you know, he's run for president, he's won, and suddenly the con man, in order to sustain his celebrity and his brand, he's locked in with white supremacists and all these political people. That's his lifeline here, you know. I mean, he can't give that up because that's it. And so the man is, you know, an ideological zero, probably, just about himself and making money. But he's now locked into this white supremacy crap, you know, because the whole thing with Obama, you know, he's born in Kenya, well, yada, yada, yada. You know, the racist stuff, people love that. And suddenly now he's a brand creation of the white supremacists, and, you know, he has nowhere else to go, you know what I mean?
And the Christian evangelicals.
Of
now,
course,
come on,
let's
you gotta
put them in the same block. But then here the problem is right now. Now this is what this current story today is about. Okay, he's gone through two iterations, his father's money, $400 million. You know, he gets around, it's $400 million seems to be the number here. He gets $400 million plus from The Apprentice. Well, now he's in debt, D-E-B-T, debt, for $421 million from, as Nancy Pelosi says, we have no idea who he owes this money to, Russians, whoever that might be. And that money is coming due in the next 4 years. So if this guy's reelected, he's going to have creditors on his tail for $421 million. Well, where is he going to get that money? Where has he been getting this money for all these golf courses? That's the big question, too. And, you know, as I was in El Salvador, and there was huge malls that were virtually empty, and we were told, well, it's just drug money laundering through these big malls, and so they're just Potemkin villages. They're empty, you know. Well, look at his golf courses. You can look at them the same way as money laundering for, you know, nefarious people all over the world, these friends that he's made. He knows gangsters and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, the argument is that a lot of these golf courses are money laundering operations for various nefarious funding bases around the world. And, of course, everything that this guy does, all the failures that he does, plays into his lifestyle. Golf courses, big fancy golf courses. You know, everybody sits around and drinks, and, you know, these wonderful gold inlaid walls of these huge golf courses, you know. And golf courses are the most plutocratic sort of enterprise you can imagine, because it's taking huge amounts of land. You could grow things on it if you wanted to, and turning them into useless things for plutocrats and fat people to chase a little white ball around, you know, while they're making deals and sucking each other off and doing whatever the hell they do.
They don't even walk.
All these questions hover over all of this story, which basically – And this is the bottom line of the story. They say that Donald Trump's most sensitive ego issue is, how rich am I? You know, if you start saying, well, you're a phony, you're not really rich, the guy goes ballistic, because this really hits at his core, because it's this phony idea as a con man that he's really very rich and a billionaire, whereas he apparently is not even a one billionaire, that he deals in, you know, $67 million here, $32 million here, $12 million here, $500,000, $12 here, you know, and it all accumulates, and all this huge morass of the Trump empire, and it's all there to pump up this whole phony idea, which is a very American idea. Look at Herman Melville wrote The Confidence Man about a guy on a riverboat. You know, Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn is all those guys along the river, the Dutch and the Dauphin, the Duke and the Dauphin, the King, you know, they're all con men. American con men is an American institution. And here, this guy has foisted this onto the American people, enough people to get him elected president of the United States. And suddenly, you know, he has no clothes. It's the emperor has no clothes. If you really analyze this this huge take from the New York Times, is that the guy is a phony. Now, at what point that will sink in to the people, the evangelicals, the white supremacists, the, you know, the right-wing people that tend to, you know, even decent people who tend to vote for him, at what point will they realize, you know, this is just a scam artist who is, you know, exploiting us, our prejudices and our the frustrations with life, the way, you know, decline in America is affecting our particular individual lives, you know, and we want it back like in the 50s when, you know, we were riding high and, you know, everybody knew their place and all that kind of thing, black people and whatnot. And he, you know, is manipulating these really noxious prejudices that exist. And at what point, and then I'll stop my rant here, at what point are people going who are susceptible to this con scam from this man, very talented man in some sense, at what point will they realize they're being scammed and that he really doesn't give a rat's ass about your particular petty little life and problems you might have? And at what point will they realize that? I think the election is going to be a real hard situation for a lot of people because, you know, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, Biden's going to win pretty healthily, if that's a word, healthily. But, you know, we have to see. It's a very fraught moment. And the debate tonight is going to be, you know.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's like reality TV. It's like a collision. It's like the WB, you know, the wrestling match that Trump is all about. I mean, the drama of this thing because of this New York Times release here, you know, it's like, you know, WrestleMania 5 or something, you know, it's amazing television coming up here. And everybody's going to be watching. And as the Times said recently, you know, Trump has been beating down Biden, poor Joe Biden, sleepy Joe, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, I've even, somebody's trying to tell me that he's in stage one of Alzheimer's and all this kind of stuff. And he, you know, the bar is so low for Joe Biden, performance bar. All he has to do is breathe regularly during this debate, and he wins. You know, he doesn't have to do anything because, you know, everybody's accused him of being everything but retarded, you know. And so if he says anything intelligent, it's going to be good for him. So I you know, it's going to be very fascinating. And I don't think Biden's going to fall for the bait, because if Hunter Biden was sort of a issue until this piece comes out, and you know, you put up Donald Jr., Eric Trump, and Ivanka Trump against Hunter Biden, and there's no contest there. You know, it's like, you know, gargantuan corruption versus petty corruption. You know, and it's like the lesser of two evils. Okay, we'll give that to Hunter Biden, but you know, they don't have a leg to stand on in that realm. So, I mean, the thing about Ivanka is they've got the goods on her. She's an employee of the White House, right? I guess this is the way it goes. She's an employee of something.
Making a salary at the same time
that they're making on the president's tax returns, they're donating, I think, $736,612, $612.42. You know, the number is that detailed in consultancy fees, not labeled anonymously, nothing. And then on Ivanka Trump's equivalent income tax report, she's receiving that precise amount, down to 12 cents or whatever it is, in consultancy fees for some hotel in Azerbaijan or something, right? When she's already on staff making a salary for doing that, you know, and plus now she's got a $700,000 consultancy fee. Well,
Jesus.
The buzz is that this is overtly criminal. And it's smoking gun criminal on poor Ivanka. You know, he's got his daughter involved in a serious crime, and it seems to be, you know, blink, 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 glaring in this story. So, you know, that seems to be, you know, the summing up the gist of these two stories. And so it's very serious. You know, they can call it fake news all they want, but you know, that doesn't get much traction because, you know, they got the goods. Somebody, we don't know who, and the Times in a note said it's legally, they obtained everything legally. Somebody who had copies of all
really?
These tax returns dumped them, leaked them to the Times. And so that's why, I don't know, it's Mary Trump, it's Cohen, who knows?
It could be Cohen, but I mean,
we
Mary
don't know. We don't
that.
Know. And I don't think anybody's speculating yet, but, you know, it's pretty devastating for the man because, as I say, it goes to the most ego-sensitive issue in a panoply of issues, you know, grabbing pussies and all that kind of stuff. He can survive that.
Yeah.
But the idea that you're really a phony rich person, you're not really a rich person. You are a con man, a good con man, a con man on a very high tightrope. You know, this is not, and in some sense, you got to give him credit for that. You know, everybody loves a good con man in a way.
Well,
charm. I'm kidding. It's like everybody loves a good killer. Everybody loves a good con man in America.
Let's,
you know.
Let's start this.
Okay, go ahead. I'll let you go.
Con man. Well, now you see, con man. It's not the best of American tradition, but you're right about your. And I had, you know what? I need to read that short story by. Herman Melville. I never heard of that. The Con Man.
Well, that's
I've
a
never
novel.
Heard of that story.
No, it's a full novel
it's
called
novel.
The Confidence Man. And according to my Tom Bradley, my good friend who's deceased and a literary guy, it's a rather difficult novel to read because there's a lot of allusions and things. But it's about a mysterious figure who's a confidence man. The novel's called The Confidence Man on a riverboat, you know, in the Mississippi. You know, with Lacards and all this stuff going on in the riverboat.
And this
the
is Melville?
Herman
Melville.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've
yeah.
never heard of it. I'll have to check it out.
Fine. Right. Well, it's one of his more obscure books, but it's.
Yeah,
I have a copy of it. And as I said, Tom told me that it can be rather difficult. It's not an easy.
Well, okay. That's, well, you can warn that for our Christian evangelical white supremacists out here in Kansas. You can warn them. But that doesn't.
Probably no more complicated than the Bible, of course. Yeah.
Oh God.
Oh, very
well, I'd much rather subject the analyzing nuance and interpretations of Herman Melville, Moby Dick, and the Confidence Man.
Bartleby the Scrivener, and all the great Herman Melville stuff.
Well, let me finish my sentence. And feel more confident about my interpretation of the nuances and symbolism of Melville's writing than the Bible. I mean, it's like interpreting the gobbledygook and arcane poetry, going back 3,000 years is just bullshit in my mind. It's like reading. It's as effective as reading tea leaves. This is crazy. But I'll tell you, man. This scandal is it's gotten to such a, you know, this is the problem. Mm-hmm. It's not the New York Times. It's not the factual. These are the numbers. You're even pointing out they're down to the penny.
This is down to his signed tax release, tax forms.
This is the scary part for me is not that he's a crook. The scary part is that when the Trump clan goes out on these huge mouthpieces, that paid him for over $400 million. Let's be honest. I don't know what network The Apprentice appeared on, but they gave this maniac, this crazy motherfucking
I think it
crap.
Was NBC, yeah.
See, they gave him that money. He was smart enough to license out his name to make more money off of than what they paid him. I mean, he made more.
Absolutely.
I mean, all they got to do is say fake news, and I'm wondering how many people in Pennsylvania and Kansas and the red states will go to the trouble of reading that New York Times article. That's the big deal.
Well, very few,
a lot of them,
I think. Yeah, very few.
Well, they've got to. They must. I mean, it's just our duty to.
Well, I think they
must.
In fact, that's why I take the opportunity of your wonderful show to talk to any Kansan who happens to be listening to say, beware, you know, if you're going to put this guy into a second term, just beware, you know, because, you know, they talk about in intelligence, the one thing they want to know, do you have anything that makes you vulnerable, blackmailable, and that sort of thing? In other words, are you a closet homosexual? Can they, you know, blackmail you for that and therefore get leverage on you? Or many other things, you know, are you in significant debt? In other words, are you at the horse races? Are you a gambler? Have you lost lots of money? So you're therefore vulnerable to people saying, sure, hey, I'll bail you out. You know, I'll loan you, I'll just give you $100 million here. But you got to do X, Y, Z. For me, on a national scale with people like, Vladimir Putin, and Erdogan in Turkey, Duterte in Philippines, and all these authoritarian pals that he loves. At what point do the Russians say, okay, we won't, there'll be no trail, you know, we'll just pay off your debts. You know, I mean, look at I watched this Agents of Chaos of two-hour exposés about all this, and I watched the other one the other night on voting machine and scams. It's just unbelievable. So this idea that, why did he make Manafort his campaign manager? And Manafort took no salary for the job.
Really?
Well, Manafort was in hock to, you know, these Ukrainian pals of Putin, and, you know, he was seriously in hock. They were probably gunning for him at some point. And so he cut the deal with them. Look, I will, you know, be the inside man here on this Donald Trump campaign, and that'll mitigate your pressure on me to pay this immediately back, because I'll be giving you something here. I'll be the inside man on Donald Trump's campaign. And of course, you know, he was a fucking crook, and, you know, Yankovic or whatever his name was, the total crook who ran Ukraine and that whole sordid business over there. You know, it's just when you watch these documentaries, somebody who spent their life making sense out of this, and he calls this 4-hour documentary, at least maybe more than 4 hours, he calls it Agents of Chaos. In other words, he spent his whole life trying to figure it out, and he can't still figure it out. It's so confusing.
Well,
that's on HBO. It's called Agents of Chaos.
Oh, wow. Well, listeners, by the way, almost all of you are on Netflix, subscribed to Netflix, and
I got it on demand. If you get HBO, you can get it. And there's
one
called Kill Chain. It's good. Kill Chain. It's a 2-hour documentary.
Let's stick with Agents of Chaos right now, because I want to give the crackers out here, the deplorables. I want to give the deplorables an inside scoop.
Oh,
I'm a deplorable. I consider myself deplorable.
That was a terrible slander. Deplorables.
No, I do. I do consider. But never mind that. I consider myself.
Okay. Let's pass.
I got
up
this
on
real
that.
Good tip. I got this real great tip for you, listeners.
Okay.
You can go to Prime Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And I know most of you have, because I see the UPS truck driving around here delivering Amazon to you, my neighbors and everybody.
Right.
I mean, it's a way to keep safe. I understand. Screw plutocrat Jeff Bezos, but he's screwing us. But it's convenient. But
we're being screwed six ways to Sunday.
If you're on Amazon Prime, I know. If you're on Amazon Prime, you can get a 7-day free trial, but you've got to sign up now. And don't be like my household. We signed up and then we forgot to get off of it. But for 7 days,
that's what they want you to forget. Yeah, right.
Well, we did. So we're hooked up. But you can cancel any month. That's another thing. You're not a year on.
So what is it you're getting for doing this? Yeah.
You're getting HBO. You can watch HBO through Amazon Prime. And that'll give you access to Agents of Chaos John Grant is talking.
You get it free. You can go on demand if you have cable, and you get it free. And it's two hour. There may be more coming. I'm not sure. It's hard to keep up sometimes.
Well,
with HBO.
even the little villages, the cable's going down, man. It really is. I mean, they're losing.
Yeah.
It used to be you had to live in a little. Out here where I live, you have to live in a village to get cable. There is no cable for country people.
Right,
to live in the
rural
country.
Area.
There's satellites, but I mean they're outrageous. They're outrageous too, you know. So
right,
most people do, if they do go through it. This I'm giving you a good turn on. If you get Amazon Prime, get a 7-day HBO and watch Agents of Chaos. John Grant recommends it.
I recommend it. You'll probably, and unfortunately, I think this is why people. It was just a piece on the radio. I was on the road today on faith. Why, you know, people are returning to faith, and my question was faith in what, you know? But okay, because people are there. In other words, if you watch 4 hours of Agents of Chaos, you may be more confused than you were at the beginning. You know what I mean? So be prepared. We live in very fraught times, and there's a lot of confusion, and we don't always have all the answers, and that's why I think people do turn to faith and God and other things, because it makes sense, and I really sympathize with that feeling. I want to I want everything to make sense, and I want to, you know, the good old days, and, you know, when and everything was certain.
Well,
but, you know, I don't, we, I think we've lost something.
I don't know.
And, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just
I just can't believe that you can find any reason in metaphysics of any kind, but that's okay. I mean, faith
yeah,
is
well,
blind,
it's fair
and
enough.
I hate
yeah.
it. I despise it, and I don't consider it a way to look at objective reality. But
right,
that's
exactly.
Cool about
yeah.
You know, let's just
well, you're
dig
a pragmatist
this.
Like I am. I think, you know, we may be
well, let's
not exactly the same, but that's good, you know.
Okay, 2 days of Washington C-SPAN's Washington Journal in the morning, crack of dawn here in Kansas, 6 a.m. I listen to the conversations as long as I can take it, and then I usually turn it off. But I listen to the people that call. I listen to the people who call in. And sometimes you get every once in a while you get this really righteous John Grant type or Dave Lindorf type guy that calls in
God.
Smart.
A John Grant type, holy shit, man.
Type, yeah, and calls in. and but you only get like 30 seconds, maybe a minute, which is maybe two at the most. You know, it's up to the moderator that answers the phone.
Right, of course. Right.
And every once in a while, I've heard the name Smedley Butler.
Oh,
many,
yeah.
many times, not
yeah.
just once or twice, from callers, people who call in and talk about Smedley
right.
Butler as an, you know, as example of what America has become, a racket.
Right, right.
And I'm always looking. I guess I'm looking for that piece of corn in all the hog shit. You know what I mean? And all the shit. I'm looking for.
I like a good rural metaphor. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for a little gem inside the mess. You know. And I do hear him every once in a while. This one guy called up yesterday with the news, of course, top news on Washington Journal and C-SPAN was what of Donnie's tax returns and a New York Times article. Many called in and said fake news. Okay, they obviously hadn't read the article. And the one guy called in and he says, one old man called in and he said, you know, and this is paraphrasing, you could play it back. Just go to can play back yesterday morning's Washington Journal, the first half hour. And this guy comes in and he said, why, you know, he says, it's wrong, it's bad, but every damn American wants to cheat on his taxes as much as they can. And they don't want to pay taxes. It's wrong. People should want to pay taxes, but he says that they don't. He says it's this mentality. It's taking over the country and taking over the basic people. That to screw the government is not screwing the people, your neighbors, from roads and bridges and social services and healthcare. You know,
well, it's basically called hypocrisy, but, you know, that charge doesn't ever get any traction anymore because we live in such a corrupt society. But, yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, this whole Republican idea of lowering taxes and this whole instinct to, you know, Donald Trump is, Rush Limbaugh is congratulating him for avoiding all these taxes. He's brilliant and all this.
Really?
It's his job to avoid paying taxes. At the same time, all these goddamn people they love the military, they love the police, they love all these things that take tremendous amounts of, citizen taxes, let alone, all the social services that they all hate. You know, they'd rather have police and military. But, you know, all of this takes money, and you need to pay taxes. And of course, as I heard on the radio also coming when I was in the car, this idea that Donald Trump paying $750 is resurrecting this whole argument about the 1% and how the tax laws so absolutely grotesquely favor the very wealthy, including Donald Trump's tax cut. Back in the 50s and 60s, the 1%, the very rich, paid at least the maximum of 50% of their annual income went to the government because, you know, in those periods, the government was doing tremendous things, interstate highways and all sorts of things, you know. So they were really, you know, taxing the rich at a very significant rate, which left them with a lot of money, but still, you know, the society, the sense of being a responsible member of society, the wealthy was deemed taxable in a significant way, 50% of their income. Well, now it's half that. It's at least 25 or down to 20%, these super-duper wealthy people. And then, of course, you've got so many goddamn loopholes and so much corruption and looking the other way and selective enforcement and all these things that affect how a scam artist, a con man like Donald Trump, who has lawyers like Michael Cohen and other people, you know, he learned his business from Roy Cohn, the original obnoxious scumbag of all lawyers, the idea of, you know, working your way around things and not paying anything. And, you know, there's a $72 million that is responsible for this audit that he's always citing. He can't reveal his taxes because he's under audit. And the IRS said that's nonsense. He can reveal anything he wants. But this $72 million, which he got, he claimed losses, and he got this loss of $72 million. And they, without even checking, they gave him that. The IRS gave him that, and then they decided to audit him to see if it was justified, which seems to be asked backwards. And so now they're going through to see if that is justified, and if they claim, if they deem, decide that it's not, he'll owe $72 million in interest, and he'll probably owe $100 million because that $72 million was not justified.
Yeah.
But they gave it to him. Why the fuck did they give it to him in the first place if they then are going to audit him?
Well, they've laid off so many investigators and auditors in the IRS, even going back with, I mean, even with Obama and Biden, I mean, they laid off. I remember this, and I'm like going, why are you laying off all these? And they used computers, basically, they used computers to basically go after a lot of the deplorables.
Absolutely.
I mean,
well, they're going after poor people, white people, black people, but they're going after the poor people who they claim are probably scamming the government on $112.
Well, here it is. I know how it works. I've watched them do it out here. I understand why they do it. They got four kids, and one's on the way. They make $26,000 a year. Okay.
Exactly.
And they'll bullshit. They're making money on other side jobs, like doing mechanic shade tree mechanic jobs for cash.
We've all done it.
Chicken
eggs. We've all got paid under the table.
It's cash. You sell eggs. Homegrown eggs or homegrown tomatoes and get cash. And technically, you owe taxes on that. You know, not only federal, but state and sales taxes too. If you're selling things, technically, you know. But it's not a big enough amount to really shock anybody. Nobody turns them in. I mean, because a lot of people rely on that to keep that on the books, $26,000, and you got all these kids. Well, I want
they're paying for their family's sustenance.
Let me finish the scam, okay?
They want
their earned income. They want their earned income tax fund, their earned income tax credit or tax refund.
Exactly.
They want that. Why? Because once a year, the same guys and gals out here I watch, once a year, when they get that money, that's a big chunk of money. For them, right. It could be as much as, you know, $2,000 or $4,000. It could be quite a bit of money, thousands of dollars. And that's the biggest check they get all fucking year in their lives. Okay, and that's probably the biggest check once a year they're going to get for the rest of their
life. But like you say, that could be a lifesaver to a small family like that.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of them go out and buy a $30,000 monster truck with it or whatever.
Right, well,
you know,
bad decisions.
A 60-inch color TV in their basement, you know. But, I mean, you know, the thing is people, you know, I can see why they do that, but I'm like thinking, when I first sort of watched this behavior going on around here,
right.
I thought, and this was before Donnie, okay?
Right.
I this is like going back years, like over a decade, right. And I saw this behavior out here. It took me a while to fit in. I've lived here 20 years, and I sort of hung around, And I started thinking, I said, do you really, I was thinking in the back of my head, and now I'm starting to say it out loud. If Donnie Trump and the plutocrats, they all do this, but you think, look what you go through to get that your earned income tax refund
credit
at the end of the year. When really, you deserve that because you know they've been playing with your money all year, pumping up the Pentagon and everything. They do it to millions of us that way.
Absolutely.
So you're just getting your money back, okay? But what I don't understand is why they don't take that out on people like Donald Trump and the billionaires, the 1% of the 1%. And I got an academic question based on that New York Times article. Why, in your opinion, I understand he did pay millions and millions of dollars to India and the Philippines.
Yeah, well,
Donnie,
exactly.
Why?
Well,
that's the
question. You know, why did why India? Why the Philippines? Why did he? What did he do there? The point of this thing is it raises more questions than it answers. I mean, it answers a lot, and the answers aren't good for him. But it also raises more questions, as Nancy Pelosi said. You know, if he owes $421 million, who the hell does he owe it to? You know, and the President of the United States, does that make him vulnerable? Is that why he kisses Putin's ass all the time? Because he's in hock to Russians, which is very, very likely. And, you know, it just raises many, many, many questions of, a guy whose life has been secretive because he's a plutocrat. And once you get to that level, you can run a secret life. You can keep everything secret. To me, it's almost like, Paulo Freire from Brazil wrote the Pedagogy of the Oppressed and all those liberation theologists down there, Gustavo, I forget his last name, Gutierrez, the liberation theologies, and they always had this slogan, I guess you'd call it, that went with it, of the preferential option for the poor. In other words, if you're a liberation theologist, you know, you give your concern to the poor. You preferentially option to them. In other words, in our society, unfortunately, over the last 50 years or so, starting with Reagan, it really went into gear, we have gone completely the other way. We have a preferential option for the rich. Now, this is pretty simplistic sort of, you know, structure I'm describing, but I think there's a lot of truth in it. There's a lot of truth in that the rich get away, you know, like Donald said, I can get away with shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue, you know, and in the justice area with lawyers up the ass and, you know, all my friends that I taught writing with in the prison, you know, they didn't have a pot to piss in. And these people, you know, no lawyers. And so, it's like the IRS. Why is the IRS focusing on poor people? To me, it's kind of like Rudy Giuliani and the broken window philosophy of policing. In other words, the way to improve policing is you go to the very, very bottom level and you fuck with people on things like broken windows and all that. In other words, you use the onus of the police state to fuck with the people at the very bottom, because they're always coming up short on their licensing and on their broken headlights and broken windows and all that. You know, it's a philosophy of someone like Rudy Giuliani, who frankly is a scumbag. I don't know what else to call him.
He's a Donnie official boy.
Scumbag. But, anyway, you know, and all of that works with the IRS. Why are they spending all this energy trying to get $112 out of some family with five kids when Donald Trump is getting away with murdering somebody on Fifth Avenue? You know? But that's the society we have created for ourselves. And, of course, Donald Trump is, to me, and I'm going to use the F word, a classic fascist pincer movement, if you read in the study of fascism, the way that it works is it's a pincer movement with the plutocrats and the money and the capitalists at the top and the Joe Sixpack thuggery at the bottom. And they form a kind of a lobster pincer. Well, that's Donald Trump's gang, you know? I mean, he encourages the thuggery, you know, gives a rally, punch him in the face, and encourages all this stuff. And, now he says he boldly says he won't necessarily leave office, you know, and, he's even, done things to encourage violence and things. And so, he's that's the bottom pincer. The top pincer is the plutocratic money, and the bottom pincer is the thuggery, the 38% who love it when he kicks around leftists, you know, hey, kick him in the face, kick him in the face, yeah, you know. And here we are. Now we're facing this incredible election.
Pardon? All that is feeding, Coliseum crap, you know. That's just spectator sport, which I'm beginning to think is the spectator sports are the ruination of the country. But
you got reality TV artists, and he's a master at.
He's just throwing red meat out to the red staters. That's all. They're getting cheap entertainment. It's cheap entertainment.
It is on that level, unfortunately, yeah. It's like the nation has been turned into a coliseum, and it's like, hey, thumb down, kick that leftist son of a bitch. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, or the Black Lives Matter.
Or blacks or anybody,
Yeah.
If they're down, kick them again. Kick them some more, you know.
Yeah, undocumented worker, their kids, too. I mean, it's just an endless line of people that he feeds to these people, which reinforces their reactionary attitudes. But
absolutely,
I think all that's about. I think that's all bursting. I really do. He's so crooked that I really think people are beginning to. It's like, well, I got away with it, or I'm not getting away with it. I get these horrible letters from the IRS,
and
they say they're going to. They're going to put liens on my property, maybe foreclose. I mean, it's making me crazy. I'm having PTSD flashbacks from my last war in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
But I did a tour due to it. I mean, suicide rates. My kids want to kill themselves because they can't get out and go dating with their girlfriends and boyfriends. I think Donald Trump and the plutocrats, including the likes of Nancy Pelosi. Now, I think they know this. I think Biden knows this because there's people like Bernie Sanders in their ear. And they can read more numbers, not just the money, the income tax that Donald Trump makes, but they can also read the unemployment numbers, 40 million 30 million laid off without any health insurance. You know, there's no health insurance. Huge numbers, based just not with 2018, but
well,
now 2020.
Supreme Court justice is lined up to turn to cut that off. Yeah, yeah.
Now, yeah, the majority will now delete Obamacare, ACA, the Affordable Care Act. So, I mean,
it's
this
incredible.
I think people. Now, I'm not going to predict Biden wins. I'm not. But I will say this. I think people are really at – they've reached a breaking point, and that's why they run out as soon as the great orange ape leader tells them it's safe to run out. Well, they were just ran out. They're going to the
–
fair – county fairs, the 4-H fairs, I mean, out here. And none of them wear masks, you know, and it's just –
Well, you
know,
we're in
now,
a third wave now. The wave went down a little bit. Now it's bumping up again. We're in a third wave.
I think you should look at this. Well, one guy, we got to go here in just a minute. And we got 2 minutes, and I'm gonna let you have it, that 2 minutes. But I would just with one guy that my doctor wife studies a lot in epidemics and pandemics. He, I can't remember his name exactly, but he's all over the place. He compared it to a wildfire. There's not really waves.
Yeah.
And just like when the wind picks up, the wildfire burns hotter, you know?
Fair enough. Fair
and he said that there's not really a wave. The wildfires hit the mid states and other places where we weren't affected, where there's, you know, the population density is less.
Yeah, well, the fire rages when it finds fuel.
Right, when people run out and don't take any safety guidelines
whatsoever. When Florida opens up the bars and everybody goes to get drunk and get laid and suddenly they have COVID, you know. And then they go visit their grandmother and she's dead, you know.
Yeah. 2 weeks later, it's slow. It's slow, slow motion murder. It is slow motion murder. And I mean, I think people are beginning to get that. And I think it's raging out here right now.
You're right. And of course, places like Kansas is where this is all very critical. Like,
now.
You know, us liberals in the city, we've given up on this guy long, long, long ago.
Right.
But as
well,
I think it was Michael Cohen said, that this New York Times piece sort of is the beginning of the end, is the way he or someone else said that. In other words, he doesn't have the Teflon. He can't escape this. This shows that he's a phony on a very, very deep and important level. And, you know, it could be, as we say, the beginning of the end, and the end would, of course, be the election, which is indisputable. In other words, it's such a win for Biden that it's indisputable. Now, I'm not predicting that. I think you got to fight like a scrapper up until November 3rd. But
right.
That's what I'm hoping for, anyway.
Well, we got it.
All right, Mike.
Bye, John.
All right, take care, Mike. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
We'll see you. See ya. John Grant.